This is Logic, the short and sweet podcast giving you the off-the-record lowdown on your everyday legal questions. Today, we have with us Mary Patton of Bluegrass Elder Law. She's going to talk to us a little bit about wills, estates, and probates, and all of that good stuff. Let's get started. All right, Mary, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So I'm Mary Patton. I'm an attorney with Bluegrass Elder Law. I do estate planning and long-term care planning primarily. I am from Lexington originally, grew up in the city, was raised here. I went to college at UK, like 90% of the people who are from Lexington.
Go Cats.
So I graduated from there. I got a degree in communication. And then I went on to law school at the University of Dayton School of Law in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
My husband's from that area of the country. It was an interesting experience. So after I graduated, my first job out of law school was working for the probate court judge in downtown Dayton.
Okay.
And I will tell you that experience was incredibly helpful to like practicing in this area of the law. So I understand what things work and what things don't work, and that really shaped the way I practice law today.
Awesome.
And then I moved back to Lexington and started working here at Bluegrass Elder Law, and I've been here about 6 years.
Awesome. And do you love it?
I love working
here. You have a beautiful view. I love that view.
I know. My view overlooks Cheapside Pavilion, which is really nice.
Yes.
So,
So let's go ahead and get started. Okay. We'll jump right in. Why is it important to have a will? What is a will?
Okay. So a will is basically a document that lays out who's going to be in charge of your stuff when you die and where that stuff is supposed to go, who you want it to go to.
Okay.
So that's basically what a will is. And you probably want one because if you don't have a will, the government has already indicated where your stuff is going. So the legislature has enacted statutes. They're called the intestacy statutes, which basically means you die without a will. Intestacy means you don't have a will. Testate means you have a will. Intestacy can sometimes be what you want and sometimes it's not what you want. So say in my general situation, I'm married, I have children. If I died without a will, my husband would get half of my stuff and my minor children would get the other half of my stuff. And so that's probably not ideal.
So would those two children then split that half?
They would.
So they would technically get like 25%? Okay.
So, I mean, everyone knows that my husband probably wants to own a good portion of our assets with a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. That sounds like a great idea. I of course can write wills. So I have written my own will to fix that problem. but in general, a lot of people don't understand what happens if you die without a will. So, and like I said, in some cases it may be exactly what you want. In some cases it's not. But a will also gives a lot of guidance to who can be in charge of moving that stuff. That person is called the executor, or the statute uses the word personal representative.
Okay.
So the personal representative is that person who's in charge. And they get to make decisions oftentimes about what bills are paid and stuff like that. It's not a role where they can exclude or change provisions of the will, but they do have control of the assets while the bills are being paid and the assets are being handed out to the people entitled to them.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So what's the average cost of making a will? Can it range? It's a huge range.
So the average cost of making a will probably varies wildly. A very, very simple will should probably cost you around $400 would be my guess. However, if you have trusts in your will or things like that, it can go way up.
So the more complex all of the things you have, the more you're probably going to pay.
Exactly.
Which makes sense.
And I will tell you some of the things that people may need in a will they may not even be aware of. So things like trust for minor children, or if you have someone in your family who is disabled or on government benefits, there should be a special type of trust for them. Or if you have family members or children who have money management issues.
that would be great.
Yes. Yeah. So those are the type of things that you would cover in your will as well.
Okay. So in what cases do you see the most that maybe a will's contested or...
Okay.
Does that happen often?
The will contests do happen. So there are two main reasons for contesting a will. Mm-hmm. So the first reason is that the person lacked the capacity to sign the will, which means they weren't mentally competent to do so.
Okay.
And the second one is undue influence. Basically, someone asserted their will upon another person to have them sign the will.
Which I would say the service, that's probably the two biggest reasons we get calls for them wanting to contest mm-hmm. a will.
Exactly. So, what I want to see in my wills is that the person understands what they own, who they are, who their family members are, and is able to appreciate their relationship to those family members.
Yeah, exactly.
If someone is making a major change in their will, we want to make sure that they know they're making that major change and right. we know why.
Mm-hmm.
A will is much more likely to be contested if, say, for example, mom comes in and she executes a will leaving everything to son and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she comes back in a couple years and makes a couple changes, but still it's son and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she does it a couple times. And then the month before she dies, she changes everything and leaves it to son. That would be a big surprise. And that okay. would raise some yeah. red flags.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure.
So what's the average time to probate a will?
Okay. So the average time to probate a will, again, this is the general attorney answer, is it depends.
Yes.
So if there is just a surviving spouse and the estate is $15,000 or less, it can be done in basically a one-time court appearance and then okay. you're done. There's some other reasons you can do that as well, but mainly it's the surviving spouse. In general, if the estate is larger than $15,000, it's going to take about 6 months to a year.
Okay.
The estate has to stay open for 6 months
mm-hmm.
To be able to pay bills. And that is a statutory rule, so we can't do anything about that. But in general, in Kentucky, probate is a really casual proceeding.
Right.
As long as there are no red flags that are waived along mm-hmm. the way. And as long as most of the individuals get along, it's actually pretty simple.
Awesome.
I actually did, because when I worked in the court in Ohio, uh-huh. probate in Ohio, it, in comparison to Kentucky, is much more complicated.
Really?
You have to have, even if you were the only beneficiary, you file an account and file receipts, and it's just a lot more complicated. Kentucky allows for something called an informal settlement, which is basically where everyone who is a party to the estate signs off and says, I got what I was supposed to get.
Right. Well, that does sound
and
so
I'm happy.
Easier.
And then they can close the estate. It's so much easier.
Awesome.
So probate in Kentucky really is not a scary thing.
Awesome.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is a holographic will?
Okay. A holographic will is a will that the person, the testator, the person writing the will, has written entirely in their own handwriting. It has to indicate that it's a will, and it has to be signed by that person at the end.
So somebody could, like, be at a restaurant and write it on a napkin and say, this is my will?
Technically, they could.
That's awesome.
I will tell you, again, from my days in the probate court, mm-hmm. there are some things that don't qualify as a holographic will.
Okay.
A lot of times people think that they need to type these up and make them really nice. And the problem is, if it's typed up, it's not a holographic will.
Not in your handwriting.
That's exactly right. A holographic will also doesn't need to be notarized have witnesses, which is kind of interesting. You do need to have someone who can testify that it is that person's handwriting after they die.
Okay.
So
awesome. Mm-hmm. So we get lots of calls on the service about deeds and mm-hmm. wanting those transferred. And what does that mean for...
Okay. So are you talking specifically about while someone's alive or after they've passed away or both?
Both would be great.
Okay. So in general, a deed is a legal document that conveys title from one person to another.
Okay. So for a house or a car? Mm-hmm.
It's a piece of real property, real estate. Cars are done by titles. Which you do down at the DMV. But a deed is essentially where I could turn over my interest in my home to you or to my husband or to somebody else. And then if I were to pass away, the house would have to be transferred out of my name into, for example, my husband's mm-hmm. name or something like that. That, under the statute, doesn't require a deed. It just requires usually an affidavit.
Okay.
But we get a lot of calls, too, here at our office about deeding real estate from a mom or dad who's elderly to their child.
Right, which was what we get a lot of calls mm-hmm. about as well.
And I tell people that may or may not be a good idea. It really depends.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are trying to do it to skirt other family members.
Yeah.
Which happens. Sometimes it's because mom or dad needs to go into a nursing home and they're trying to get that save, quote unquote, save yes. the property.
Yes.
And then sometimes mom or dad just wants to gift a child a piece mm-hmm. of real estate. There are pluses and minuses. So if they are doing it for nursing homes so that they can become eligible for Medicaid,
uh-huh.
There's a 5-year look back provision. So okay. if they gift the house to their kid, they may be disqualifying themselves for Medicaid.
Okay.
So there are exceptions, but in general, that's the rule. Additionally, if they are gifting the house to their child, there may be capital gains tax issue. That sounds really scary. That's what I've
heard a new, yes. It's like, is this a new thing, like taxing the gift?
So,
quote unquote.
There are gift taxes. However, the gift tax doesn't go into effect until right now, in 2020, it's $11.54 million per person.
Oh, okay.
So for most people, this is not going to be yeah. a problem. But what is a problem is when you gift a piece of real estate to someone, it gets the basis that you had in the property. So if I've bought my house and I paid $100,000 for it, mm-hmm. and it's now worth $200,000, right. and I give it to you, your basis in that property is the $100,000. So if you sell that property, you're going to pay taxes based on the difference between the selling okay. price and what I paid for the property.
Okay.
However, if you inherit it from me, you get what's called a step up in basis. So you would get it at that $200,000 mark. So your tax is going to be less. Yes. Okay. So, I mean, we tell people all the time that tax is just one thing to consider.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really think about the whole overall plan as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So here's a scenario that we get calls about all the time. Somebody will call and say, I was supposed to get the estate from my, let's say, your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And at the last minute, he changed it. Now I get nothing. Can they do that?
So we get calls about this a lot as well. I call this the disgruntled heir. So none of us have a guarantee that we're inheriting anything.
Right.
Okay. Even from our own parents, there's no guarantee. Parents can leave stuff to whoever they want it to. I will say that, again, as we were talking about with the will contests, if there is a history of mom or dad leaving stuff to both kids and then they change it the last minute, I would say that raises a red flag. Right. But, I mean, what they can do is they can talk to an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes part of that is just opening the probate and seeing what's there. Sometimes there's nothing there to argue about, which
right.
Oftentimes is the case. sometimes the issue is a beneficiary designation has mm-hmm. been changed. So beneficiary designations don't flow through the will. So those are, it's basically set up as a contract between the person who originally owns the account and the institution who holds it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can list someone to get that property when you pass away. And all that really requires is a little bit of paperwork and a death certificate.
Okay.
So the will doesn't cover that. So that can be things like life insurance or retirement accounts. Those are the two big areas. So those can be changed too during lifetime. And of course it is sketchy. There's no better word for it when things change at the last minute.
Right.
But sometimes individuals also know that time is coming and they mm-hmm. want to change those things.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, I try to help people prevent this problem by making sure everyone in the family is on the same page.
Right.
So that's really, I there's not a lot I can do after right. the fact. They can contest wills. They can, you know, sue the other person in their family. Usually, sometimes it's not worth the money to do it because right. it might cost more than what you get in the end.
Right.
So it's really fact dependent.
Okay. So we'll wrap up and I'm going to ask you about what is Bluegrass Elder Law? What resources okay. do you provide and who do you help?
Okay. So Bluegrass Elder Law is our law firm. We are an all-female law firm right now. We have
awesome.
Yes.
Love that.
We have three attorneys in our office. And so we do everything from your general estate planning to really complicated Medicaid applications to contested guardianships and then the probate work as well. As far as estate planning, that's really anyone who's over the age of 18 and has a heartbeat.
Okay.
So everyone should have some sort of basic estate planning, in my opinion, and I know I'm biased.
It makes sense, though. Mm-hmm. You become an adult at 18, you probably want to have all of mm-hmm. your assets covered.
So estate planning includes things like the will we were talking about. Uh-huh. It also includes powers of attorney, which I think are really important.
Right.
Especially for even like college-age individuals, mm-hmm. because if something happens to them and they're over the age of 18, their parents don't have legal rights
right.
without so some sort of documentation right. in place. So we emphasize those. Additionally, when individuals are going to go into a nursing facility and need help figuring out how they're going to pay for that, we assist them with planning for that. Okay. So that can be through private pay, long-term care insurance, or through Medicaid. We help them look at all of the available resources and figure out the best plan
Perfect.
For them. As far as resources we provide, we do often speak to the community. We do a lot of stuff with the Alzheimer's yes. Association, with the Senior Center, and we do volunteer with Legal Aid, especially for their Wills for Clinic.
Right,
their,
in which we...
Wills for Seniors.
We did a podcast episode with Legal Aid, and it was great as well.
Awesome. And then we try to generally help answer questions along the way for other attorneys or for service providers. We're pretty open and helpful. And then our website is also a really great resource for people who have simple awesome. Questions.
And what is that? What is the website?
Okay. So our website is bgelderlaw.com. And then we try to keep that blog updated. You can just click on blog at the top.
Awesome.
We try to keep the blog updated with just kind of some things that are going on.
Okay.
And common questions that people might have.
Which is great.
And so there's a whole set of articles about probate, and what to expect. And then there's stuff in there that kind of some common myths as well, like can you disinherit someone by giving them a dollar? So there's all kinds of stuff that we cover in there like that as well.
Well, that's awesome. And what is your all's? What is your address and your contact information okay. in case?
Awesome. So we are located on Mill Street at 120 North Mill Street in downtown Lexington. We're pretty close to Goodfellow's Pizza, just on the other side of Cheapside Pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone number is 859-281-0048. And again, you can reach us online at bgelderlaw.com. There's a contact box there as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mary, so much for all of this great information. This has been really, really, really helpful for me, and I'm sure everybody out in the community that will listen to this. If you find yourself in need of an attorney, you can always contact the Lawyer Referral Service at 859-225-8644. And you can like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.